there's the reason that I'll turn into someone I can trust, or I'll turn back into dust. Hour three of the morning show kicking off. Overrated, underrated. Grant Williams coming up at 9:20. Going to be a fun hour on this Championship Wednesday. Want to remind you that Inward Half has launched their Spring 24 line. Go to inwardhalf.com to check it out. You will not regret it. Inward Half's apparel, top notch. Locally owned. Friend of Fan Run Radio. Support the people who support us as you get ready for golf season. But you can wear this in the swing of everyday life. InwardHalf.com. Sam, did I properly stall? Do you have the overrated, underrated intro ready to go?
I do.
Fire it up, please.
Overrated. Very overrated.
It's overrated.
Overrated, my friend.
Overrated. I'm going to tell you why. I think that's a solid rated right there. It's perfect rated.
He underrated, man. He got some swag. He has some real swag.
Lobsters are underrated. They don't die.
All righty. Little bit of overrated, underrated. Here we go now. Overrated, underrated. The NFL franchise tag.
This is a good one because I don't know how to rate it. On one hand, it's a nice tool as a fan to know that you're not going to lose your best player. On the other hand, it's kind of terrible because it makes you feel like the player is going to hate you and like he's not going to sign a long-term deal and it's going to make him mad and it sets up for a potential holdout. But ultimately, as a fan, I think what we care about most is not losing that player in that immediate year. So I'll call it underrated. I don't necessarily think it's fair for the players. I think more free agency would be better for the NFL and be better for those players to be able to kind of maximize their careers and guaranteed money because they are so short. But as a fan, I will say the franchise tag underrated because at least you know if you have a stud, you're not going to lose them, at least for 1 year. You buy more time to be able to work out a long-term deal for them.
Do you ever think, I'm sitting here thinking about it from the player perspective. If it's a player who doesn't get that tag, might mean that they haven't performed as well as they thought, but it's also like, I wonder if that's, does that engender some, you know, of a mindset for that player, like, well, I'm definitely out of here then at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, I think it could be – you could almost argue it's overrated in that perspective. Now, it's a free market, and so most of those players are probably like, man, I just want to get paid the most I can. So they might veer towards that. But I wonder from time to time if there's a couple players like, you know, Saquon's in the headlines a lot right now. And, you know, it's like, man, you know, you picked me really high at one point. Now, what, you don't just don't care anymore? I just wonder if that's on their mind sometimes.
I saw a great tweet. It said, the franchise tag is so weird. Imagine trying to quit your job and your boss is like, I'm sorry, you're the lucky person we chose to force to work another year at a predetermined salary.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's terrible for the players.
Yeah.
At least you get top five money. So, like, it is a nice payday for 1 year. But if you're a running back, that could be your last year. Like, it would be terrible to have to play on the franchise tag as a running back just because you know they're going to run you into the ground literally with no security.
Sticking with running backs potentially on the franchise tag that are, well, not going to be on the franchise tag now. Overrated, underrated, Saquon Barkley.
I think he's overrated. And I say that with a little bit of pain in my voice because I've had him on my fantasy teams in the past, but he has disappointed me. The years that I had his rookie year, which he actually performed pretty well. But beyond that, I had him for a couple other seasons. It was like a dynasty league where he protected players, and he killed me. But then I don't go after him. He ends up on a team, has a pretty good season. That was season before last. I think he's overrated. Incredibly talented, but can't stay healthy.
I'll say properly rated just in the sense he's a talented running back, but he is kind of the poster child for reasons not to pay running backs. Like, for as great as he is when he's healthy, you have to throw in that caveat when he's healthy. Like, the Giants drafted him too high. that's a red flag, or that's a feather in the cap of the people who say don't draft running backs high. Yeah, look at Saquon Barkley, look at the Giants. He's also a reason why not to pay big running backs, because he can't stay healthy. Like, his entire career, he's been out. He's really talented, but he's not impactful. So I'll say he's properly rated, because that's how I feel about him. I think that's what the perception of him is.
All right. Overrated, underrated. Zion Williamson saying he will participate in the dunk contest if he's an all-star.
I'll say that it's underrated, because I love a good leverage play. Keep that in the back of the mind, fans, next year when you vote for all-stars. If you want to see a superstar in the dunk contest, vote for me, Zion Williamson. It's like the kid in high school. It's like, vote for me for class president. Free recess, free lunch.
Yep.
Free recess. What the hell? They don't charge you for recess. No, but you know what I meant.
Extra recess time.
Promising sure, you everything sure. If you vote for me. That's what Zion's doing. But we want stars in the dunk contest. So the fans, vote for Zion.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe underrated, because he could be responsible for resuscitating the dunk contest. They need something like this. I don't love the play, honestly. However, if he could get back in the dunk contest or get in the dunk contest, that changes things. Becomes more interesting.
I'm only doing it if I'm an all-star. I like that take, though. Yeah. Don't even bother calling me if I'm not an all-star.
Right. Yeah.
Lose some weight first, but... that's just me.
Yeah. I can't cast stones there. I'm a chubby boy, too.
Well, yeah, we're not getting paid to.
Yeah.
Supermax to do it. Is he on a Supermax?
I don't think so yet. I think his contract negotiation's still going on, I thought. Like, I think New Orleans was basically like, we're not giving you the Supermax until you
lose weight.
Until you show that you're going to be serious. I think is where they stand there.
All right. Overrated, underrated. Yogurt.
At first, I thought you were going to say Jokic. I don't like yogurt, so I find it to be overrated. What are the benefits of yogurt? Is it supposed to be healthy for you?
Nice protein.
It has protein in it and some good fat.
Probiotics.
We're not talking about Froyo, though. We're talking about
We're not on Dippin' Dots again.
Is yogurt good by itself, or do you have – because when I think of yogurt, I think of people putting stuff in yogurt.
Correct.
Is yogurt actually a good standalone? Because to me, if you have to start throwing stuff in it, by definition, that it's kind of admitting that it's overrated. Start throwing some granola in there, some bananas, some berries and all that. Like, if it can't stand on its own, it's kind of overrated.
Would those toppings that you throw in the yogurt then be overrated, though, too?
They'd be underrated. They need to get more shine, those toppings.
Well, they're not good standalone then either, right?
People like bananas by themselves. I see you deep throating a banana over there twice a week.
Oh, so my wife actually uses, she puts stuff in her yogurt, but it's mostly nuts. And then she uses this coffee protein powder that does come flavored, but has no sugar in it or anything else. But it's additional protein and it adds flavor to it. I think it's tough not to put something in it. You got to give it some texture and flavor. And the fact that it is wet, as it were, that all that stuff mixed makes it, I think, good.
So, do they sell it mixed, or do you have to like mix it yourself?
They sell little containers that might have a lid thing on top with some
the stuff in it. Okay,
I buy the flips.
I've seen that. Okay,
yeah,
I've seen those before.
Those are good.
Yeah,
I guess I thought they came maybe in it, but yeah, that makes sense.
So this is coffee flavored protein powder.
It's coffee protein, and then it's got flavors, like different flavors.
Okay,
like, you know. So, but it's. She gets this powder. It works. It's been good for her. I just think that I think it depends on what you mix into the yogurt. Is my point. If it's nuts and some fruits like berries, it's always, if it ends in a berry, it's always really good for you. That's one thing. But if you're putting chocolate chips and honey roasted nuts and all that kind of sweet stuff in it, then yeah, you're kind of defeating the purpose.
So,
I think it's underrated. I'm an okay yogurt consumer. I don't love it. I don't hate it. I do eat it from time to time, but I'm not an everyday guy.
It's been a long time. I've never even tried yogurt, to be honest. It looks gross to me. I'm a texture eater, and like I might have taken one bite in my youth and decided it was against me, but it looks like texture I don't like.
There was one that. I forget, Yoplait used to make called, I think they still have it. It's hard to find, though, called Whips. So it's kind of whipped, and it's fluffier,
that.
And it's good, man. And it's, but of course, they've got those flavored, like key lime or strawberry. Yeah. Or
see, it's the fluffy I don't like. Like whipped cream, I don't like the texture.
What's your most hated texture food?
It might be this. Oh, no, slimy, like slimy onions and stuff, like slimy peppers. Like, I don't really like that.
Like cooked onions, you don't
like that? Mushrooms. I can take, like, little sliced onions, like diced up really much, like, you know, diced up really small.
You like them raw instead of cooked, though?
No, I don't like them raw at all. No. I'm just saying I can do them.
Well, that gets slimy if you cook them.
Well, I know, but everyone says you have to have onions for flavor, and I've given up arguing with women about that. I'm like, okay, fine, just put some onions in there. Just don't tell me about it and make them as small as possible, and I won't pick them out. I'll be fine. But, like, mushrooms, I don't want. Like, slimy, no. The yogurt feels slimy adjacent.
It's funny. One of my things I despise is raw onions, you know, or even sautéed onions. But I like an onion ring.
My stepbrother, he would eat onions raw.
Yeah.
Like apples.
Oh, I have friends that do that, too.
Yeah. Just biting like an apple. Disgusting. So you like onion rings. See, I don't even like onion rings because of that.
The good onion rings. There's, it's a very fine line, though. There's bad onion rings, and then there's good ones. I like a good one for sure. As long as they're not too thick. That's the problem I have, are those rings that are super thick.
Mm-hmm.
It's making you sick, I can tell.
Yeah, like I'm just picturing just bad times from my childhood, because we used to have an A&W close by, and their onion rings, like, they were deceptive. Like, they were a little small, and like I swear there weren't even onions in them. But then, you know, I was like, okay, I like onion rings. These are great. And then just the older I got, and the bigger the onions got, and the bigger the onion rings actually had just big onions in them, and I just, these are disgusting. I'm thinking about it. I'm ready to throw up.
My two things, onions are one of them, oysters. Mm. Cannot do them. Cannot.
I've never been a big oyster guy either.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I've never even tried an oyster.
You would hate that.
Because I look at it, it's like too slimy.
You would hate that, absolutely.
But also,
it is slime. It's like just drinking a snot rocket, kind of.
Actually, now that you mention it, I have it tastes like salt water, right? When you take it, like, there's salt. No, I have tried it, because
slurp it down.
I like to tell people that I usually know what I like, but I will try new things.
Try it once.
Yeah, like, it's been a New Year's resolution forever. Like, keep trying new things. Like, you know, that's something I try to do. So I have tried an oyster, and I just remember the salt water just hitting my mouth. Didn't like it. You're right about that. But I did try it. I'm not afraid to try it. I just know I'm not going to like it. So it's just the ultimate confirmation bias. Like, yeah, it sucks. I'll drink it if you want. I'll eat it if you want. I'm not going to like it, but here we go. Anything else?
The fumble through the end zone rule?
Nah. Are they changing it? I saw that the NFL is getting together and talking some rule changes. Is that one of them?
About it, maybe, but I don't think they're changing it.
I don't think they're changing it.
I like it.
I love it.
I think it's very underrated.
It's my favorite rule in football, honestly.
Bob, you're anti-fumble out of the end zone?
It's one way or the other. Either don't have it, or if you're going to fumble out of bounds, it should be – I think you were the one that said that. It's like basketball. It should be – they should be consistent, do it across all fumbles out of bounds.
I'm fine with the way it is now, but if we're going to go start changing it, I lean towards, just every fumble out of bounds is a turnover. But I don't want to do that either. So let's just keep it the way it is. I'm tired of everybody trying to change everything. This is a sign of getting older, Bob, is whenever you start realizing people are just trying to change everything. And, like, some things are fine the way they are.
Oh, yeah. Certain things will annoy you more than they used to. It's coming.
Yeah.
I can see it now. It's already coming.
68-team tournament. Oh, let's make it 76. Just leave it alone. We don't need those extra 8 teams. We don't need it. We honestly didn't even need the extra 3 teams when we went from 65 to 68. We didn't really need that either, but whatever. 12-team playoff. No, 14-team playoff.
It's rare that any sport changes the rules that I end up liking. Baseball, I've liked what they did with the pitch clock and the batter clock, and then the bigger bases, because I think that's inhibited more stolen bases, and also what they put a limit on checks, right, where you can throw over to first base. You can only do 3, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Something like that.
So, I liked that they made, you know, the 3 batter minimum. For pitchers, that was my favorite rule change. Mm-hmm. I hated watching one guy pitch and then come out after getting an out.
Makes it much slower, too.
Yeah.
That is the last thing I'll say on that. And it's a bit of a get-off-my-lawn thing, but we talked about how Tennessee is doing it right now. I am not a fan of the opener approach with pitching. I hate it. I just think it gives managers a chance to overthink. I miss the days where pitchers would, you know, throw 120 pitches without batting an eye. Now that's an absolute rarity. It only happens if it's like a borderline no-hitter or something like that.
Grant Williams, Tennessee Volunteer legend, coming up after the break. We'll get his thoughts on the current team and this impending tournament run. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Back on the morning show, pleased to be joined by Grant Williams, SEC legend, Tennessee Volunteer legend, and now in year five of his NBA career in Charlotte. Grant, top of the morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Top of the morning. How you doing?
Doing good. What's it been like going back home to play for the hometown Charlotte team?
It's been a blessing, man, just being able to be here home, be around family, be around friends, you know, play for a city that, you know, you grew up in and love, and you want to, you know, build something great here.
Grant, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Let's dovetail off that a little bit. So in this past year, you've played for a title contender. Then you moved to a mid-level playoff team in Dallas. Now a team that's in a rebuild. And I know it's still ball wherever you play, but that wide range of teams and what you're playing for might feel a little different to some. And certainly, you know, what you were accustomed to in Boston, but have you been able to bring things to that team? Because I got to believe the Hornets look to you as a leader too with that team. It, you know, things that you've learned to develop from your previous gigs, and I'm thinking not just basketball, but culturally, you know, locker room culture, et cetera, that can prove to benefit that rebuild going on in Charlotte.
Yeah, I think that's the goal. I think we're not as far off as people may think. There's talent here. In Charlotte, actually every place that I was in. Boston was considered a favorite. Dallas, I think, is talented enough to go all the way and compete at the highest level. They have Luka and Kyrie, and those two are just gifted and incredible, and they can carry a team all the way to the championship if they really want to. And then in Charlotte, they're young, but there's talent. Like LaMelo Ball is really, really good. Brandon Miller is going to be really good in the future, next 15 years of his career. And then when Mark Williams and everybody else gets healthy, has a lot of talent, and just gotta figure out what winning looks like and how do you win every single night.
No, I think you're exactly right about the talent in Charlotte. It is a little slept on. I think the league in general just has an embarrassment of riches when it comes to offensive talent in the league. So much so that the NBA has started talking about maybe making some rule changes to give defenses a fighting chance. You're the VP of the NBA Players Association. What realistic changes do you think make the most sense moving forward for the NBA to give defenses a chance?
That's a real question. The competition committee has been trying to handle that. I'm not serving on that currently. But in regards to rules, it's just a matter of what the league wants to have it look like, you know, whether it's more physicality on the perimeter or whether they do the same in the paint, you know, in more close quarter areas. You know, it's just depending on kind of what style of basketball the league wants to establish and bring back. We have a lot of guys that are going to be able to play outside in, but also, you know, as the league continues to get younger, but also more athletic and more sizable, you know, who knows what the league will continue want the basketball to look like, you know. So there's, you know, you see it kind of right now at the end of the season where the physicality kind of heightens. I don't know how they'll if they'll keep that as you see it start of next season, just because 82 games at the same physicality may impact people's bodies and load a little bit more. But I'm curious, you know, about what potential rules they could change to add or bring back, or even just, you know, maybe talk about for a defensive side of the basketball.
Moving on to a little college, and a program you're certainly familiar with and a coach you're certainly familiar with. And I think about it when we talk about this kind of this emphasis on defense versus offense. And what we've been watching here in Knoxville is, from our perspective, a bit of an evolution with Coach Barnes. Feels like there's more emphasis on that offensive side of the ball. Having a Dalton Connect on board helps that new mindset, I'm sure. But you know this. Coach never loses sight of the fact that great defense still travels. You can ask Alabama about that from this past weekend. From your perspective, having played for him, Do you see anything different? Is it just us believing that, or do you see something different with how he's coaching versus the seasons you were there?
Yeah, he's done a good job of adjusting to the talent that he has. You know, originally he was trying to find the next me, and currently they have guys that, you know, are just phenomenal at what they do. Like Dalton is an elite scorer, both from the perimeter, but can also play in the mid-range. And then they have a bunch of guard play. You know, right now this guy is one of the best, better point guards in the nation. Santiago has a great veteran leadership, and then Josiah allows the switchability of the team, and then Jonas and all the other bigs are playing with physicality and able to protect the basket. So they still have that defensive identity, but they also have a different style of offense on the other end, allowing Dalton to play to his strengths.
Yeah, when he talks about his evolution, he's been a little bit more willing to play guys in foul trouble. I want an honest answer here, Grant. Do you ever ask Rick Barnes if he regrets having you on the bench to start overtime against Purdue?
I never asked him that, man. It's one of those where you got to trust the coach in every scenario. Back in when I was playing, he definitely trusted me with two fouls, you know. That's similar to how he trusted Dalton in that Auburn game to play that first half and allow him to keep stay in and, you know, not get your third. But I haven't talked to him about that Purdue game coming off at overtime. You know, maybe it could have changed, maybe it could have been different. But, you know, we wouldn't be in that position if we didn't, you know, foul at the end. So.
I got to be honest, Grant, it still breaks my heart 5 years later. Can you talk about the difference in just postseason basketball as we are here on the cusp of March and Tennessee's chasing championships starting tonight in Columbia, trying to win a regular season SEC title, and then, of course, when you get to the big dance?
Yeah, this starts tonight, you know, with the level of physicality and commitment, because this game tonight, can we do a championship? So this got to show the team's mentality. Got to show, you know, what they're trying to accomplish at the end of this season, both not just the regular season title, but what they can lead into the tournament and also the NCAA tournament. And it's going to bring them together and allow them to understand the importance of, you know, the winning games like these, you know. And that's something that I feel like I have most more regrets about. Like, we lost to Auburn that last year at Auburn when we were winning most of the game. Bruce did a good job of taking me out of it, and they ended up winning that game. We could have had a share, you know, or even the SEC tournament championships. I think that's where, you know, it changes the whole, you know, story of your season if you can get that win and then continue to use that to propel you forward.
How aware are you in the locker room at a place like Tennessee about the history of the program? And in Tennessee's case, the fact that a team has never broken through and made a Final Four, is that something the guys are aware of and talk about and kind of strive for? Or is it just like a coach keeps you locked on one game at a time, control what you can control?
You got to focus on one game at a time, because in college basketball, you can lose any game. So you have to focus on how do you do all the little things to impact winning. And really that is the focus, because you can't look ahead. You can't look and try and say like, oh, like this is what we got to do. This is, no one's ever done it. So you got to actually commit to, you know, focusing on the little things. So that way you can get to that point and do it together.
We're talking with Grant Williams, VFL Grant Williams. Hey, wanted to get your take on this. We talked for a second about Dalton Connect. You've had the privilege of playing against some of the best players in the world, the best players in the world, really. And you see a variety of NBA stars firsthand on the regular. We know you're not necessarily a draft Nick, but, you know, there's a lot of talk about where Dalton's going to end up as, you know, a first-round pick, et cetera. From your perspective, and based on all the players you've seen, how do you feel someone like Dalton could stack up with those regulars in the league, given that, you know, it takes a little bit of time sometimes, but do you feel that stock's overblown on him, or is it just right, just based on what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think that he's got potential to be a lottery pick, a guy that is not just a lottery, but even top 10 in this class, maybe even top 8. You know, it's one of those where he has the talent and the ability on the offensive side of the basketball, and he tries on defense. Like, that's one of those where you don't have to be an elite defender, but you got to be someone that is willing to battle and compete, and he has that edge. So now it's just a matter of putting those two together. And offensively, he's gifted. You know, his size, his ability to elevate him a shot, So now I get where he wants, but also knocked down at a high clip. You know, the shots that he takes at, in college, you know, kind of are like you don't see typically. Like he's, I remember watching that Auburn game live, and I was like, he's shooting this NBA range with confidence and off the dribble, off screens, and that's something that offense can always help you in this league. And especially if you're a guy that doesn't necessarily need the ball in his hands to have the offense. You know, he's a guy that can space and spot, but he's also a guy you can, you know, come off pick down or screen actions, be able to knock down shots, or even play, make the right read and get the ball. He's an unselfish player, too. That's something you start to teach, you know. He was getting double teamed, and rather than trying to force his way through it or keep the ball in his hands, he trusted his teammates, getting Jonas in the pocket or kicking out to Santi for second drives and threes. You know, he has a really great feel for the game.
As fans and media, you know, we try to make comparisons. We've been trying to find a player that Dalton Knecht reminds us of. Do you have a submission when you watch him and you see him and say, oh, that looks like so-and-so's game right there? Or when you're so close to, you know, still playing right now, obviously, and being young in your career, that everyone kind of is their own standalone player?
I think he's kind of his own standalone player right now. I can't really think of a comparison over the years. Just because he's of his size, like he's really like 6'8", 6'9". Like his ability and like knockdown shots, like Doug McDermott wasn't as athletic as he was, you know, especially going downhill towards the rim. And he's more of a swing, you know, big, kind of like 3-4 that can shoot, but also come off screens and really go downhill. He has to get back to the basket game. So it's really hard to think about a guy that, you know, reminds. If you have any ideas, it'd be better if I could, you know, give you an example. But
I like Doug McDermott. That's the one I kind of have been circling, and you kind of mentioned him. I think Doug's got a little bit of underrated hops. I think Doug's sneaky athletic, but Dalton does seem to have a little bit more bounce.
Doug was favored his right hand. Dalton plays a little bit more out of his left and going downhill and has a little more size and creation game. Doug was great because of his size and his ability to shoot. But, you know, they're both kind of different because Doug, like in college, you know, he was a little heavier. He was a little, you know, more of a four. Dawson's a little bit more of a wing. And it's like you have to think of somebody that's able to go downhill. Like, I don't know. I don't remember Doug ever doing that move like he did against Johnny Broom at Auburn. Yeah. I didn't see him doing stuff like that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Johnny Broom and Auburn, loved seeing you at the game last week. And we all noticed you were sitting with Coach Heupel. So is that – have you guys met before or spent any time together? And my other question would be, how was he in terms of his hoops knowledge?
He's actually really, really good. You know, him and his son, you can tell they love basketball. I've never really sat and spent a lot of time with him because every time I come, he's typically during season when he's coaching. And that's normally the times I'm able to come to the campus and he's focused on, you know, I'll come to the Florida game. I've come to games. So I haven't necessarily had time to sit down and talk to him, and I actually had a really great time. You know, he's a phenomenal human being, phenomenal coach, and was able to talk about not only basketball but the football team, and really excited for his direction. You know, I always heard great things about him from Taco Fall, because he came from UCF, him and Danny White, and Don Taco said he stole two of our best people, and he was true and honest about that, because every conversation I had with Danny, every conversation I've had with Coach Heupel, you know, it's shown true. And we have a lot of great coaching talent currently at the university. It's crazy because I remember talking to Bobby Mays when I was being recruited, when I was a freshman. He said Tennessee goes in waves. There's times where the basketball team is great, there's times where the baseball team is great, or football team is great. But the best time to be at the University of Tennessee is when all three are popping together. That's what we have right now. It's similar to that of like when it was 08, 07, when women's basketball, football, all those were good. Phil Fulmer and you know, Pearl and all those guys. The same way right now, where basketball is really heightened, top five team in the country, football has potential to be. In baseball, you know, there may not be top five, 10 this year, but they have potential to be that talent of a team over the next 3 years.
All right, Grant, we'll get you out of here with some word association. I'm going to fire some topics at you. You give me the first thing that comes to mind. You ready?
Yep.
Knoxville.
Tennessee.
Rick Barnes.
A legend.
March Madness.
The best.
Draymond Green.
Competitor.
Rick Rubin's all-white party.
Michael.
Sister Jean.
Heartbreak.
Tennessee basketball GOAT.
Bernard King.
Settlers of Catan.
Oh, moment in history.
Grant Williams, appreciate the time. I've really enjoyed watching you and Charlotte actually get to touch the basketball. That's a little bit different than what you were getting in Dallas. I've enjoyed watching you get to shoot and play some basketball again. Best of luck the rest of the season. And I'm glad you're going to be locked in on this ride with Tennessee down the stretch.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for waking up with us.
All right, talk soon.
Sam, send us to break. It's the morning show here on Fan Run Radio. I got to say that Grant Williams took the word association very seriously, and I actually do applaud that. I assumed like it maybe lead to like a sentence answer on each. Like I want him to know like, hey, it's rapid fire. Like you don't have to give long answers, but took it very literal. Knoxville, Tennessee. Well, yeah, that is the first thing that comes in your mind, I guess.
That's the instructions, I guess. You know,
it was
word association, and wasn't sentence association.
And maybe that's on me. See, I kind of thought the word situation is association is I give a word, then you give the association. Sure. But it was a great job. I would have liked for him to maybe call Draymond a bad word or something, but he is a competitor. He is a competitor. The Sister Jean heartbreak thing does kind of hurt my heart, too.
Yeah.
He was on the wrong end of two heartbreaking losses, man. When you look at the Sister Jean, Loyola bounce, you look at the foul for Carson Edwards, like, it'd be hard to have an All-American type of player have worse endings than that two separate years. Teams that were ranked number one and had chances. That's heartbreaking, man.
I agree. The most feel-good answer I got out of it was what he had to say when I was just kind of, you know, saying, hey, man, does Josh know his ball? And, well, the answer to that was yes, which is awesome. But then also just how he fanned out into what we've talked about, again, man, we're in such good hands from an administration standpoint, what he had heard from Taco Fall and just great, man. It's just everybody's feeling that, you know. He said it too. It's like, you know, you're in a position right now where everything's going well all at once for your athletic programs for the most part. It's a good time in Tennessee sports for sure.
We keep saying that. Now it's time to start winning championships starting tonight. Let's go to the phone lines. 865-546-8200. Who do we have, Sam?
We got Matthew on the line.
Matthew, thanks for joining the show. The floor is yours.
Hey, thanks for having me. What a great interview. Great questions, John. I too was asking, you know, when you said Draymond, I was hoping he'd use some explicative words.
You know he has to hate Draymond after the way Draymond bashed him in the media. You know he does. But Grant, smooth. He's not going to fall for that trap I set.
Yeah. Guys, you had a great segment yesterday talking about Coach Barnes, this tenure at Tennessee. And, you know, I applaud John for, you know, seeing the light and finally coming into the water of the pro Barnes teams.
Yeah. I, just for the record, Matt, I've been here for years, but it's as good as it's ever been. I have no ill will towards Barnes at all, but I wasn't holding on to that the last couple of years like some people that have been, you know, affiliated with the station. Just for the record, I've been pretty positive about Barnes the last 3 years.
Well, no, I get it. And also his lack of postseason success is clearly shown, so I understand the frustrations. This is why I called in, because I thought it was a great question that you asked yesterday, and I believe the over-under were set for you at, 4 years as far as Coach Barnes coaching again? Was it four or five?
I think we went to 2.5 and then 1.5, right, is what we ended up saying, and that was kind of the debate. Like, because 5 years, you know, Bob and Sam both had the under on 2.5 years, so 5 years would be crazy at this point.
So I'll do you one better. And I'll just hang up with this question, and I'd love to listen to y'all kind of role play with it. Say we get to the Final Four. Say you win that game, and then you actually cut down the nets, and you've won the national championship at Tennessee. What more would Coach Barnes have left to prove to people? You know, he's 70 years old. He's got grandchildren. He's been coaching a long time. You lose a lot of key pieces next year. What would be left to prove to him? And at that point, would you just kind of ride off into the sunset like Peyton Manning did? I'll hang up on that, boys. Have a great day and go Vols.
Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I mean, the math changes, of course, if you cut the Nets down and win a national championship, because that would be a storybook ending. You could always say that if you win a championship, you kind of owe it to the guys to try to repeat and defend it. in other sports at least. College basketball, we don't really say the same thing. There's not many repeat champions in college basketball. How far do you have to go back to find a repeat champion in college basketball?
Florida.
Yeah.
Okay, so Florida.
That's getting close to, that's not 20 years, but it's getting close to that.
Yeah, what is that, 07,
it was 08? It was 06, 07. 06, 07. Right? Like, and the older I get, the more impressive that is.
Yeah. The fact that they all could have gotten drafted and they all just came back.
Yeah,
you know?
And I was going to say, they just rolled, too, by the way. They it wasn't like they had some, like Virginia's national title where they had a lot of breaks go their way. They just, they were pretty dominant.
First year, they came out as, what, a 3 seed and got hot. And then, yeah, the second year, they came back as defending champions and they defended it. So, like, if you're Barnes, you know, maybe, let's just say hypothetically you won a national championship. Is it the perfect exit? Yes. Would he also probably feel like he owes it to watch Zakai in his last year? One of his favorite players. I'd say he might feel like he owes it to Zakai to finish up one more year. But if you give me a national championship, I'm completely fine if Barnes decides to hang it up and we have to kind of take a step back as a program for a bit. I'd be fine with that. I'll take that trade.
Yeah, it's a great question by Matthew, and we even talked about this a couple weeks back, too, about do we think that he being Barnes would go if it's just even a Final Four? And I don't know. I again, having the privilege to talk with him in some other settings, I still look to all these other coaches that are part of his fraternity that have moved on, and it's mostly, in most instances, it's not necessarily because they don't have gas in the tank. Jay Wright's a great example. It's they don't like what the game's become. And so I do wonder if they win at all. I think, and you bring up a good point about Zakai, but I don't know. I still think he might be done.
Jay Wright excluded. The other coaches, quite frankly, had lost their fastball. 4 or 5 miles an hour off of their fastball. They were not as good as they once were. They were on the decline. Coach K, bitter old man. Roy Williams, I mean, I feel like, you know, I feel like the Villanova shot kind of ended Roy Williams' time at North Carolina in terms of being a national champion contender. Maybe they turned around and won. They beat Gonzaga the next year, maybe. So maybe after that.
Yeah.
NIL starting to come into everything, I feel like, was a big exit for a lot of those older guys.
But like, for me, Rick Barnes, I think you can make the case he's as good as he's ever been, if not better than he's ever been. Now, he might not have the same fire, of course, and not have the same energy and be yelling on the sidelines and out pounding the pavement recruiting. But, like, his program, the back-to-back-to-back years he's had, feels pretty good. This team right now feels like it might be his best team ever, even including the Texas team. To me, Rick Barnes is aging really well in the game. I couldn't say the same thing about Roy Williams and Coach K.
And I'm not a Coach K fan, but the one thing I would say is he also adjusted. He adapted to two kind of eras of basketball because if you remember, he was very outspoken against one and dones, and then he went and did it and arguably almost did it better than Cal was doing it because he was kind of the inventor of that. And I think maybe, yeah, Coach K was, like you said, he was angry and was getting to a point where it's like, I don't want to adapt anymore. And I think that's what I think maybe is happening with Barnes is he's at that crossroads. And maybe he's figured it out at this point from the standpoint. And we saw it not only with Santi drawing up a play on the sideline against Alabama, but also last Friday, I don't know if we haven't talked about this, but our guy Polinsky was doing most of the media availabilities with everybody talking about the Alabama game. And it's like, I feel Barnes maybe doing a little more, I am, you know, I'm the CEO, and maybe that is his adjustment. Maybe he's going to be okay with that moving forward. So that's kind of an interesting wrinkle.
I mean, you look at Coach K, they won the national title in 15. Like you said, that's when he out won and dunned.
Yeah.
Calipari. Elite Eight, second round, Elite Eight, Elite Eight. Tournament canceled. They finished ranked number 11 in the country. Maybe they were poised for a run that year. I don't know. Next year came back, took a top top 10 preseason team. They missed the tournament at 13-11. And then he announces his retirement, his farewell tour, and they make the Final Four. So, like, that was a pretty good, you know, stretch between winning it all and, like, actually getting back to a Final Four. Which is a slip for Coach K, obviously. That's a slip for him. Barnes, you know, again, maybe has his best team ever. Now, maybe he gets out of this and Dalton connects with a flash in the pan. He looks around and says, hey, this NIL stuff's still too hard and recruiting right now is still too hard and I don't want to do it anymore. Or maybe he's like, hey, I got a pretty good collective behind me and we're finding some pretty good diamonds in the rough and I can take these scorers in the transfer portal and I can teach them defense and I can find some efficiency there. I can find some ways to work around and help me, some marketing efficiencies, make Tennessee better than they should be. I don't want to think about the end for Barnes yet, though. I want to think about a championship tonight because that's what's at stake. We'll wrap up the show on the other side. It's the morning show here on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been there?
Sam, you tell me you've got a little bit of, I don't want to say breaking news, but some media rumors out there affecting a hometown kid and a legend in the NFL?
Yeah, some very interesting rumors swirling. Apparently Peyton Manning and Omaha Productions are pursuing Bill Belichick to join them. That one's going to be very interesting. You know, obviously Belichick's been kind of rumored to be a TV guy coming post-retirement, NBC, you know, Fox, whatever it may be. But Omaha Productions trying to get him.
Interesting. Like, it's so – Omaha Productions, like when you say that, I think Manning cast. But I know it's not just the Manning cast. So, like, this could just be as simple as Belichick has a weekly 30-minute TV show where he diagrams maybe the best game plan in the league and talks about a certain matchup. It could be as simple as that, right? Or
in the past, it's been a while, but, you know, Omaha's done that. They did it with didn't they do it? They did some version of that. ESPN did it with Kobe. But then
Peyton's Place.
Yeah, Peyton's Place is another one, and you know, they keep spinning that stuff off. So it could be as simple as that. We don't know what it would be.
Okay. But,
because I still think there's, you know, certainly the big networks like CBS, Fox, et cetera, they've got to be, you know, kicking the tires on Belichick from a different perspective, like as an analyst or something.
Yeah, so, like, you know, if Belichick, if they can give him a light workload and, like, hey, you can work 30 minutes a week and we'll give you $2 million, like, that makes sense. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't see how they could really compete money-wise with CBS and NBC, who should be throwing him, you know, $20 million a year to get him in the mix.
Yeah, him and Jason Kelce, they're going to be the hottest free agents, so to speak, out there right now. I guess, or depending, well, it happens to Greg Olsen, too.
It doesn't seem to be trending in the right direction for Greg Olsen. I saw him on X doing promoted ads about DraftKings going live in North Carolina, and, like, it just felt beneath him having to do that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. One other media thing, we've talked about this in past weeks, and it's a quick update, but all sorts of lofty expectations that were surrounding that, what I kept calling the sports streaming super team between ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery. Well, now, earlier this week at the Morgan Stanley Technology Media and Telecom Conference, which is watched closely by Wall Street, Lachlan Murdoch, CEO at Fox, came in and said, we think this will take some time, and we project that maybe we'll have 5 million subscribers by year 5. So, I mean, they are walking this thing back considerably. I really believe that this...
5 million by year 5 seems very low.
Exactly. Talking about $50 price point, they, I think that this was them racing to the market to get some sort of message out to the Wall Street set saying we're going to be competitive with the big tech companies, the Apples, the Netflixes, others. They don't really know what to do next. That's my opinion on it. And we're seeing it now, you know, because there's too many loose ends on this right now. So it's hard to tell when this thing will come to fruition. They originally said it was going to be this fall. I'm not buying that at all. I don't see it happening that quickly. And it's definitely being walked back.
Not necessarily surprising, but I still find myself disappointed. Games to watch tonight that impact Tennessee. Well, When you control your own destiny, you ain't got to watch other teams. Tennessee controls their own destiny. It's as simple as beat South Carolina, and you win the SEC outright by 2 games. You'll have a 2-game lead. And then also when you're looking at other seeding things, guess what? Doesn't impact Tennessee because Tennessee, I think the consensus is Tennessee controls their own destiny for a 1 seed as well. So take care of business, win tonight, win a championship, and that's all you need to focus on. I assume we all have Tennessee winning tonight. Anybody calling for a loss? No.
Absolutely not.
Good, great, grand, wonderful. The G.I. Jake Show coming up next. Hopefully we are recapping a big win tomorrow morning. Wake up with us. But in the meantime, stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.